Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. Front page. BP to expand midstream infrastructure in Delaware Basin. Significant expenditures will let company ramp up drilling by year's end. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. British Petroleum is back in the Permian Basin thanks to its 2018 deal to buy the U.S. shale assets of BHP Billiton for $10.6 billion. That gave the company holdings not only in the Permian Basin, but in the Eagle Ford and Haynesville. With the acquisition completed last year, BP's U.S. arm, known as BPX Energy, is preparing to develop those holdings that are situated in the Delaware Basin portion of the Permian. Will Burton, Vice President, Midstream Operations, said that what's different about the company's Permian Basin presence is the significant investment it plans. The Permian will provide significant growth for us in the next 5 years, he said in a phone interview. The first step is building up the company's midstream infrastructure, expanding the midstream assets the company acquired from BHP. While declining to provide a specific amount, he said the company is making significant capital expenditures in infrastructure, including pipeline and gathering lines for gas, oil, and water, and 9 central delivery points with adjoining water disposal facilities. The first central delivery point is currently under construction in the Orla region of Reeves County. The first 2 are expected to be completed by end of the year, at which time BPX will begin ramping up its drilling operations later and carrying through the next 4 to 6 years. The company is planning job fairs for Friday and Saturday for a mix of positions, from power systems, plant and pipeline site managers, to facilities engineers, electrical engineers, control I&E engineers, to electrical specialists, maintenance specialists, plant operators, and pipeline technicians. We're looking for people that demonstrate the values that are key to our future success: innovation, motivation, trust, and teamwork, Burton said. BP's new midstream infrastructure will use what Burton called the latest and greatest technology designed to limit emissions while the company increases its oil and natural gas production. Technology will include drones and enhanced automation and controls, all designed to reduce BP's environmental footprint. By operating our midstream infrastructure, it is the best way to get all our resources in a cost-efficient, environmentally friendly way. This footprint will drastically reduce greenhouse gases versus traditional treatment plant build-out. The central delivery points will not only lower greenhouse gas emissions by utilizing electrically driven compressors that will emit less greenhouse gases than natural gas or diesel-driven compressors. We're trying to be good stewards of our environment by having the lowest methane footprint, he said. Homes over $300,000 dominate December report. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at MRT.com. The number of homes sold rebounded in December. Leading the way were homes sold for between $300,000 and $400,000. Midland's most active price range for homes sold hit 58, easily the most during the last month of the year, according to the Permian Basin Board of Realtors. The closest price range in December, in terms of the number of homes sold, was $250,000 to $300,000, 34, and $400,000 to $500,000, 33. All totaled 199 homes were sold in December. That was 39 more than November and 26 more than December 2018. Homes sold again went for top dollar as the average price for a home sold, $346,927, was more than $18,000 higher than any December on record. What was a truer indication of how much the $300,000 to $400,000 price range dominated the month was that the median price for a home sold was $320,000, which tied December for the second highest month of the year and was $14,000 more than the average median price for the entire year. We believe that we will see some pricing adjustments in the coming months as we still do not have a large number of listings in the under $300,000 price range, said Carol Nall, Multiple Listings Service Executive Director and Vice President of Operations for the PBBOR. Only about 20% of the current inventory is in that price range. The increase in the number of buyers in December means the inventory inside Midland County dropped nearly one-third by the end of the month. The PBBOR reported that inventory dropped from 526 homes, an inventory of 3.2 months, in November to 471 homes, an inventory of 2.3 months. There were 297 homes on the market at the end of December 2018. While the $300,000 to $400,000 range dominated the number of sales in December, the PBBOR reports there were still 137 homes in that price range on the market at month's end. The organization reports the average home sold in the price range in December was on the market an average of 36 days. For homes sold in prices at or greater than $200,000, the price range with the fewest days on the market was $400,000 to $499,000, 29 days. Local briefs from staff reports. MISD publishes turnaround plan for Scarber. Midland ISD has published on its website homepage a turnaround plan for Scarber Elementary, which has failed the last 2 years, according to Texas Education Agency's accountability ratings. The two-year plan, which will begin in the summer, calls for campus administrators and teachers to focus on education programs, creates time for professional learning community meetings, assessments, data analysis, and reteaching, and devises a method for effective lesson plan feedback cycles. Financial resources needed to implement the turnaround plan include $10,500 for 7 teacher instructional leader stipends, $120,000 for professional development with Solution Tree Consulting and Relay, and $1,620 for Get Better Faster Books and Driven by Data 2.0 resources for staff, according to the website. The website includes a comment box for anonymous feedback from parents, teachers, students, and the community. Austin. RRC opens Lubbock Field Office. The Railroad Commission of Texas is opening an oil and gas field office in Lubbock to serve the northern section of the Permian Basin. The Lubbock office at 6302 Iola Avenue, Suite 600, will oversee District 8A and will serve the following counties: Bailey, Borden, Cochran, Cottle, Crosby, Dawson, Dickens, Floyd, Gaines, Garza, Hale, Hockley, Kent, King, Lamb, Lubbock, Lynn, Motley, Scurry, Terry, and Yoakum. This area previously was served by the Abilene Oil and Gas District Office. A grand opening celebration for the Lubbock office, which will be staffed by 17 employees, will be scheduled for the spring. FBI continues search for bank robbery suspect. The FBI is continuing to search for a man suspected of robbing in an Odessa bank earlier this month. The robbery occurred at BBVA Compass, 3809 East 42nd Street, on January 8th, according to a previous Reporter-Telegram article. The suspect is now featured on the FBI's unknown bank robber's website, and the wanted poster reveals new details about him. The subject entered the bank and presented a note to a teller while displaying a black handgun, possibly a 9mm, according to the wanted poster. He left the bank with an undisclosed amount of cash and headed to a nearby I-Mart Express, where he entered a Dodge Ram. The suspect is described as a white male with green eyes, approximately 6 feet tall and about 180 pounds. He was wearing a black hoodie with yellow checkered flannel inside the hood, a dark-colored hat, blue pants, white shoes, black-rimmed glasses, a white surgical mask, and blue latex gloves. And he carried a brown or beige duffel bag, according to the poster details. The bed of the pickup had a diamond plate auxiliary fuel tank, and the front doors possibly had a company logo that was covered with tape. The FBI released the following statement. We are asking for the public's assistance in identifying this unidentified individual. Anyone with information can call our FBI Midland Resident Office at 432-570-0255 or go to tips.fbi.gov or contact Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS-8477. Obituaries. Mildred Lewis Holman, age 92, of Midland, passed into the arms of her Savior on Saturday morning, January 18th. She was born Mildred Lewis McCartney on May 19th, 1927, to Lewis and Ethel McCartney in White Right, Texas. She is survived by her sister Dorothea, one son, two daughters, 9 grandchildren, 28 great-grandchildren, and 24 great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband of 60 years, Gene Holman, her daughter Sharon, son-in-law Newton, and 2 grandsons. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Mildred's name to Cotton Flat Baptist Church. Visitation will be Friday, January 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at Cotton Flat Baptist Church on Saturday, January 25th at 9:30 a.m., with Pastor Rick Holman officiating. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. National news. Trump restores money Obama cut for women's health services in Texas. The Trump administration announcement reverses an Obama-era decision in 2012 to cut federal women's health funding to Texas. That came as punishment after the Texas legislature excluded Planned Parenthood from the Healthy Texas Women program in 2011, by Edgar Walters from the Texas Tribune. The federal government is restoring funding for Texas's publicly funded women's health programs, bringing as much as $350 million into state coffers and sending a clear message to conservative states. It's okay to defund providers affiliated with abortion. The Wednesday announcement from the Trump administration reverses an Obama-era decision to cut federal women's health funding to Texas starting in 2013. That came as punishment after the Texas legislature excluded Planned Parenthood from the Healthy Texas Women program in 2011 because of the organization's affiliation with abortion providers, though the women's health program does not fund abortion. The Lone Star State is once again in partnership with the federal government to provide meaningful family planning and health services while fostering a culture of life, Governor Greg Abbott said in a Wednesday statement. The decision was long awaited. Texas first asked the federal government, perceived under Trump as more sympathetic to Texas's anti-abortion crusade, to help pay for its women's health programs in 2017. Healthy Texas Women offers family planning and health services, such as pregnancy and STD testing, to low- and middle-income women. In 2018, it served approximately 173,000 people. According to the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, state officials said the restored federal funding approved through 2024 would allow the program to reach more than 200,000 clients per year. The federal government will pay 90% of costs for family planning services and a little more than half of the costs for other women's health services. State funds will cover the rest. With Governor Abbott's strong leadership, we continue making significant strides in improving access to women's health and family planning services in Texas, said Courtney Phillips, Executive Commissioner of Texas Health and Human Services Agency. Women's health advocates, who have long condemned the state's defunding of Planned Parenthood, criticize the decision. This waiver is a sham process meant to condone the targeting of Planned Parenthood and other women's health care providers without actually improving services for women, said Stacey Pogue, a women's health expert from the left-leaning Center for Public Policy Priorities, a think tank. Pogue said the federal funds will merely supplant money the state already spends and will not actually improve services for Texas women. Roughly half of states have programs, largely paid for by the federal government, that offer family planning services to women who don't qualify for full health insurance benefits through Medicaid. Texas has for years opted not to expand its Medicaid coverage to poor adults. Most women who are eligible for the public insurance program are pregnant or disabled. Eligibility for healthy Texas women is significantly broader, covering women whose family income is at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Texas expects to spend about $100 million in state funds on the program through 2024, in addition to the $350 million from the federal government. Texas isn't the first state to ask for permission to continue receiving Medicaid funds despite excluding certain women's health providers. Tennessee and South Carolina have similar requests outstanding with the federal government, according to Usha Ranji, Associate Director for Women's Health Policy at the Kaiser Family Foundation, a health policy think tank. "This is certainly a change," Ranji said. "Once one has been approved, it could pave the way for other states. Nationwide, 12% of women in reproductive age are uninsured, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. In Texas, the rate is 24%. Texas rebranded its state-funded services as the Healthy Texas Women Program in 2016. Since then, the program has been no stranger to controversy. State health officials that year announced they would invest more than $1 million in an anti-abortion organization known as the Heidi Group to establish a network of clinics, doctors, and crisis pregnancy centers to help fill the void of women's health providers left after Planned Parenthood's defunding. But the Heidi Group managed to reach only a tiny fraction of the number of women it said it would, and Texas canceled its contract in 2018. In its 2017 application, Texas sought permission to dramatically overhaul the Healthy Texas Women. On Wednesday, the federal government announced that it did not approve many of the requested changes, such as stricter income eligibility criteria and a requirement that legal guardians review women's health services provided to 15 to 17-year-olds. The federal government will only fund Healthy Texas Women services to Texas age 18 or over. But as far as the exclusion of Planned Parenthood is concerned, federal officials made clear they were on board with Texas's plan. The opinion page. Opinion Extra from Stuart Doreen, Midland Reporter-Telegram editor, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at MRT.com. County leaders to play large role in dealing with future growth. Tuesday was a great day for local government. Midland County Commissioners unanimously gave their approval for $1 million in funding to help the City of Midland build its new animal shelter. It was a donation that city officials were hoping to receive, and county leaders came through enthusiastically. Their donation was an acknowledgement that the new shelter, which will be located just behind the current shelter on Fairgrounds Road, will play a pivotal role in caring for abandoned or lost pets and in helping to control the pet population. Leah Lewis, Director for Animal Services for the City of Midland, told county leaders that the new center will have a surgical area for sterilization of adoptable animals and a conference room for education about responsible pet ownership. That checks a couple of important boxes. Ultimately, overpopulation is not the fault of animals, it's the fault of human owners. That's why pet ownership is not a right, but a responsibility. That is true whether one lives inside or outside city limits. A new animal shelter needs to be built. It is appropriate to have an animal facility that measures up to a growing community. And the new facility is planned to be 18,400 square feet, more than double the size of the current facility. The county is part of the community, and this shelter will provide spaces for animals found outside the city. The capacity is 80 cats and 113 dogs. Commissioners, get that. As far as the local government aspect of the decision made this week, it is hard to overstate the county's role in helping to deal with past, current, and future growth. The county has the money in its reserves and is in control of enough sales tax revenue annually that it is capable of helping other entities while still taking care of residents outside city limits. The commissioner's donation Tuesday in a special session was similar to the nearly $12 million it provided other government entities and local nonprofits, including $700,000 to the Midland Humane Coalition, in 2018. County leaders came through with a remarkable display of interlocal government action then, and they responded accordingly this week. The hope here is that all taxing entities take notice of this city-county agreement. It was the type of interlocal agreement that community members should expect. All residents in our community will be better off when our taxing entities are working together to make a difference. That is why Priority Midland matters. That is why we are better when taxing entities aren't operating in silos. And that is why Midland County residents should expect community-wide initiatives to go through a process to see how one entity might be able to benefit another. Memorial Stadium track will be closed to the public on school days. District makes change for student safety, Executive Director of Athletics says. From staff reports. James Doc Dodson Midland Memorial Stadium will be closed to the public on school days and whenever students are present in a move to enhance student safety, MISD announced Wednesday. The change is effective this week, according to the school district. The track will be open weekends or when the stadium is not in use, subject to the district's schedule. This will be a change for Midlanders who use the facility for exercise opportunities, but Blake Felt, Executive Director of Athletics for the school district, said in an email, "Today and in today's age, we cannot allow public access to the campus while students are present. To continue to allow people to come and go as they please while the facility is being used by children would be irresponsible of us as a district." Nearby Houston Collegiate Prep Elementary uses the facility for PE, and Midland High School and San Jacinto Junior High use the fields for football, soccer, baseball, and track. The district-owned facility also houses a training room and boys and girls dressing rooms. "We have students coming in and out of that facility all day," Felt said. "We are going to take the same security precautions there as we would with any other campus or school-owned facility." He said that over the years, there have been issues with debris and trash brought onto the field, broken athletic equipment, vandalism, and homeless people found living underneath bleachers or in the press box. MISD is in the process of securing the field and installing no trespassing signs. The opinion page. Guest view from the Dallas Morning News. Governor Abbott offers hope and redemption to sex slaves in Texas. If it's possible for news to come crackling across the internet, that's what happened on Saturday when Governor Greg Abbott issued a full pardon to Robbie Ann Hamilton. Robbie is someone who will be familiar to readers of these pages. The resident of Richardson was a victim of human trafficking who committed a few petty crimes well over a decade ago, during a period in her life when she was addicted to drugs and being exploited by others. She was the subject of a lengthy profile we published in 2018 about her descent into life as a trafficking victim and her long journey back to a life of personal freedom from abuse and addiction. With this pardon, Governor Abbott has done more than washed clean the criminal record of one person. In a series of editorials, we've encouraged the governor to use the power of clemency to put the fight against sex trafficking on a sound moral foundation. And that is what he has done here. Through this offer of mercy, the governor has also signaled to every victim of sex trafficking that absolution is possible. And when there is absolution, when there is redemption, it is possible for victims to cast off the burden of shame and take up the mantle of a free person. In his statement announcing this pardon, the governor noted a few parameters that we've encouraged as well when pushing for such clemency. It's important and significant that Robbie's crimes didn't harm another person and that she has since worked to turn her life around. It's critical that a pardon doesn't rob a person of his or her humanity or their moral agency, even as it offers a fresh start. But it's equally important that society at large send a signal to those being exploited by traffickers that there is hope. There is a life outside the clutches of those who are perpetrating crimes against them and against all of us. And that when a person does the work necessary to build anew, we, as a society, will stand beside them and shoulder some of the load. With a stroke of his pen, the governor struck a moral blow against human trafficking, raised the light of hope to tens of thousands of people in Texas who have been trafficked, and sent a signal to traffickers that the governor has taken a personal interest in undoing and combating the crimes they are engaged in. We hope that with this pardon, Robbie feels a weight lifted from her shoulders and that a new weight is placed on the backs of every human trafficker who will hear news of this crackle across their newsfeed. It is they who should feel the extra burden of shame, of guilt, and of fear that in this life or the next, justice will reach them. And when it does, it's not absolution that it will bring. Parsley Energy Doubles Down on Permian Basin by Sergio Chapa from the Houston Chronicle. Austin oil company Parsley Energy is doubling down on drilling in the Permian Basin of West Texas. Days after Parsley closed its $2.3 billion deal to buy Jagged Peak Energy of Denver, the merged company has filed 12 drilling permits with the Railroad Commission, the state agency that regulates the oil and natural gas industry. 8 horizontal wells filed under Jagged Peak's name target the Phantom Field of the Wolfcamp Formation on leases in Reeves and Winkler counties, down to a total depth of 15,000 feet. 4 horizontal wells filed under Parsley's name target the prolific Sprayberry Formation in Upton County, at total depths ranging from 9,560 feet to 10,200 feet. With a combined 266,000 acres of leases in the Permian Basin, the merged company has 15 drilling rigs in operation and a 2020 capital expenditure budget set between $1.6 billion to $1.9 billion. Midland Oil Company Endeavor Energy Resources filed its first batch of drilling permits this year. The company is seeking permission to drill 26 horizontal wells split between Martin and Midland counties. The wells target the Spraberry Formation at total depths ranging from 11,000 to 12,000 feet. Oklahoma oil company El Toro Resources is starting the new year with a pair of horizontal oil wells on its Ferguson McKnight Leats in Zavala County. The wells target the oil-rich Briscoe Ranch field of the Eagle Ford Formation down to a total depth of 6,100 feet. Houston exploration and production company Rockcliff Energy is preparing to drill four natural gas wells in East Texas. The horizontal wells on four leases in Panola County target the Carthage field of the Haynesville Formation at total depths ranging from 12,000 to 13,000 feet. Houston-based Brazos River Exploration is looking for crude oil in the natural gas-rich Barnett Shale. The company plans to drill a horizontal well on its Buffalo Bayou lease in Stevens County. The well targets the Swenson field of the Caddo Formation down to a total depth of 3,999 feet. Wichita Falls exploration and production company S&G Oil plans to drill six vertical wells on four leases in Wichita County. The company is targeting the Wichita County regular field down to a vertical depth of 2,000 feet.
Hi, this is Linda. County OK's $1 million for City Animal Shelter by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Commissioners on Tuesday approved providing the City of Midland with $1 million in funding to go toward construction of the city's new animal shelter. Tina Hawes, Director of Community Services for the City, said in a letter to County Judge Terry Johnson and obtained by the Reporter Telegram that the funds from the county would offset the expense the city is incurring. The Midland City Council approved $8.9 million for the project in December, which Hawes said is the total cost of the project. The city has a good partnership with the county to provide or assist with a number of services, including accepting owner-surrendered animals, animal-related arrest cases, aggressive or injured animals, bite cases, quarantine animals involving bite cases, processing rabies specimens for testing, and deceased animal disposal, was said in the letter. County commissioners said at the Tuesday meeting they were enthusiastically on board with building the new animal shelter. Anything we can do to get the pet population under control in Midland, we definitely want to be working with you guys in the city and any other organizations whose goal is the same, Commissioner Luis Sanchez said during the meeting. The new animal shelter will be constructed on Fairgrounds Road behind the existing animal shelter, which will later be demolished. In a memorandum of understanding between the county and city, the commissioners said they believed it would be in the public interest and serve a public purpose to provide funding to the city. One stipulation of the agreement between the two entities is that the funding can only be used for construction of the animal shelter, according to the memorandum. Additionally, the facility must accept animals from the unincorporated areas of Midland County. The agreement states that the $1 million from the county is based on anticipated construction costs of $8.9 million. If the total construction costs are less than that amount, the county has the option to ask the city to return a proportional amount, according to the agreement. The city must also notify the county when the funds have been used and provided documentation verifying they were used for construction purposes, the memorandum states. The new facility is planned to be 18,400 square feet, more than double the size of the current 7,200 square foot facility. It's expected to be able to accommodate 80 cats and 113 dogs. Education. Founding MC trustee retires after almost 50 years. Board votes to bestow Kenneth Peeler with emeritus title by Brandy Addison. The only founding member still on the Midland College Board of Trustees has resigned after serving more than 47 years since before the community college began holding classes on campus in 1975. K-12 Kenneth Peeler helped the college transition from educating college students at Lee High School classrooms for its first 6 years of existence to becoming a well-respected junior college that offers baccalaureate degrees and partners with the universities across the state, including Texas A&M University System and Texas Tech University. The campus has also grown to include an early college high school and pre-kindergarten charter academy. The long-serving trustee wrote in his resignation letter submitted December 16th that serving as a founding member of the board has been one of the greatest honors of his life. The time has come for me to step aside and allow another community leader to take my place, Peeler wrote. I am humbled by the generosity and support the college receives from the citizens of Midland, and I look forward to watching as both Midland College and the community it serves continue to flourish into the future. It is with deep gratitude and appreciation for each of you that I submit this letter, knowing full well that the good work we did together will continue and that Midland College will always be a shining star in our community. Trustees Larry Lawrence and Steve Kaiser reluctantly accepted Peeler's resignation during Tuesday's board meeting. Midland College President Steve Thomas said, "There has never been a founding member retire from the board. This is really a historical agenda item," Thomas said. Since joining the board in 1972, just 3 years after the college was founded, Peeler has stood alongside four presidents and has assisted in making the decisions to implement several new degree programs and construct and renovate many facilities. The more recent include the newly renovated softball fields, which were completed this month, and the facilities that are currently under construction or being renovated, including the Cowden Dining Hall, Engineering Lab, ATC Health Sciences Labs, and Murray Faskin Learning Resource Center. Through his efforts with the college, Peeler's late wife, Laveau, discovered the same love for the college. She was the one who suggested Pepe Pisano as the name of MC's Chaparral mascot. In her memory, Peeler created the Laveau B. and Kenneth A. Peeler ECHS at MC Endowed Scholarship. Because of his tenure, MC Board President Linda Cowden discussed Tuesday giving Peeler an emeritus title. He would be able to attend as an honorary board member, but would not be able to vote on any items. The board unanimously voted in favor and agreed he deserved it for his hard work through the years. Cowden said Peeler likely has attended about 450 board meetings during his time as a trustee. "That's a lot of service," Trustee Paul Morris said. Education. MISD posts new chief of staff position by Brandy Addison. Midland ISD has posted a position for a chief of staff. District officials said the chief of staff will serve as a liaison between Superintendent Orlando Riddick and district administrators. The salary for the position is $113,820 to $133,849 annually. The position was last held around 2010, according to the MISD Communications Department. "I think liaison is a fair characterization," MISD Chief Communications Officer Elena Ladd said in an email. The position would coordinate not just between the superintendent and chiefs, chief academic officer, chief transportation officer, chief financial officer, chief operations officer, chief of human capital management, and chief communications officer, but also between different departments, especially helping to lead projects that are interdepartmental in nature. Requirements include having a master's degree from an accredited college or university and that preferred candidates have a valid mid-management or principal certification. A candidate must also have 5 years of successful administrative experience in education or an equivalent amount of leadership experience in the private sector. The position's function and purpose, published on the website, reads as written below: successfully execute and coordinate broad general administrative and staff support activities of the district, provide counsel and assistance to other executive staff members and other divisions of the district, actualize the goals of the Board of Trustees and the Superintendent of Schools through district-wide planning, direction, program initiatives, and benchmarking and continuous improvement, provide support and direction to the district's operations, performance management, communication, and parent and student involvement groups. Responsibilities include directing and coordinating the core functions of board services, intergovernmental relations, emergency management office, athletics, police, security services, food and child nutrition services, and technology services, providing expertise to the superintendent of the development and the publication of reports related to the district goals and objectives, and to maintain the records and reports as necessary to keep the Board of Trustees informed of the district's progress and future plans, developing an integrated communications network within the district and the community, making recommendations about the implementations of goals and objectives, consulting and coordinating with the Executive Director of Accountability and Student Data to increase educational success through program evaluation results, observing reliable student data, delivering locally developed and STAND-mandated assessments, and providing training to school administrators, the school board, and the community, consulting with the Executive Director of Student Services in support of student success and achievement by analyzing trends of MISD student demographics and regional demographics to determine school attendance zones and feeder patterns, consulting with the General Counsel, consulting with the Operations and Construction Services Program to provide quality, sustainable facilities and implement a bond program, consulting and coordinating with Communication Services to assist in preparing press releases, photos, and articles for local media, designing and editing district publications, including newsletters, brochures, programs for special events, and designing the district's website, consulting with the Executive Director of Athletics to support successful athletic programs. State briefs from Wire Reports, San Antonio. Man arrested in bar shooting argues self-defense. A 19-year-old man arrested in a San Antonio shooting that left two people dead and wounded five others said he was acting in self-defense when he opened fire during a concert at a bar. Kiernan Christopher Williams is expected to face capital murder charges for the Sunday night shooting at Ventura on the Museum Reach portion of the San Antonio Riverwalk, police said Monday. As Williams was taken into custody Monday, he promoted his own Instagram account and described himself as an upcoming artist. He told reporters that another person threatened to kill him because Williams had bumped into him in the bar. "I regret everything that I did, no lie," Williams said. Court records do not list an attorney who could speak on Williams' behalf. In 2017, a judge found Williams guilty on one charge of assaulting a public servant, and he was later repeatedly jailed for probation violations, Bexar County court records show. The medical examiner's office identified the men killed as Robert Martinez and Alejandro Robles, police said. A 46-year-old woman and four male teens between the ages of 16 and 19 were hurt, but they were expected to survive their injuries, police said. Police have said the shooting was not a random incident and that at least one of the seven victims knew Williams. "It's nothing more complicated than an argument that occurred inside the club with someone pulling out a firearm," San Antonio Police Chief William McManus said Sunday night. Robles, who was killed in the shooting, had gone to Ventura with his wife to support a childhood friend who was performing that night, family members told the San Antonio Express News. His father, James Huff, said he did not believe he knew Williams. A since-deleted Facebook event indicated Sunday night's concert at the Ventura was a living dream, a showcase featuring multiple performers, and that a flyer listed Williams as one of the scheduled performers. An email to the apparent promoters wasn't immediately returned. Denton. Police fatally shoot man carrying a frying pan and cleaver. A police officer in North Texas fatally shot a man at an apartment complex early Tuesday after the man refused to drop a frying pan and cleaver that he was holding, officials said. One officer was stabbed in the melee, but officials said the injuries aren't life-threatening. The officers responded just before 3 a.m. to an apartment complex in Denton, about 35 miles north of Dallas, after several people called 911 to report a man was banging on doors and shattering light fixtures in a hallway of the complex, Denton city officials said in a press release. Police used a taser on the man, but it was ineffective. So an officer opened fire, striking the man, the press release said. The man was pronounced dead at the hospital. Officials have not released the names of the officers involved or the man who was killed, but the city said the officer who shot the man had 6 years of service with the Denton Police Department. New City Council okays Hillcrest Village by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council unanimously passed an ordinance on first reading that will allow the Midland Community Development Corp. to build a 200-unit apartment complex that is expected to provide affordable housing for Midland ISD, Hospital District, and city first responders. The approval came in the face of opposition from residents in a West Midland neighborhood. Neighbors, most of whom live on Princeton Avenue west of Midland Drive, cited traffic, the possibility of lower property values, privacy, and the desire to see single-family housing rather than apartments as a reason for their opposition. Some even said they opposed the project because they didn't want it in their own backyard. Because of the overwhelming objection from nearby property owners, the zoning request required a supermajority of those council members in attendance, which was 6 of the 7. As it turned out, the supermajority was not a problem. Tuesday's meeting was the first for the new Midland City Council. Mayor Patrick Payton, District 3 Councilman Jack Ladd Jr., and District 4 Councilwoman Lori Blong. Returning board members are District 1 Scott Dufford, District 2 Councilman John B. Love III, and at-large Councilman Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost. The crowd packed council chambers, and the public hearing lasted for an hour. City staff told council members that zoning of the project was less dense than what was currently in place, and that approval of the ordinance meant a future buyer of the property would have to adhere to the zoning changes. Council members also learned that bringing in the proper water and sewer infrastructure would not be a problem. The project also will include parking for nearly 500, a dog park, and a walking trail. The Midland Community Development Corp. has raised more than $4 million of the $14 million needed to go ahead with the $41.7 million project. It is expected to be a partnership with the taxing entities, specifically MISD and Midland County Hospital District, and the City of Midland, as it is expected to provide Class A housing at 30% to 50% off current levels for those employees. The general population will be eligible to live in Hillcrest Village, but vouchers for the discount are expected to go to taxing entity employees. One of the questions raised at the meeting was the long-term viability of a complex built to provide relief to government entities needing to help recruiting employees. Someone mentioned that rents are currently in decline and that they will be more favorable to the renter at some point in the future. Officials with the project said Hillcrest Village will still be viable if the apartment market loosens up. MISD reportedly has committed to 70 units and the hospital district 50 units. There is currently no time commitment proposed, according to the project officials, although city officials said they would like commitments from other taxing entities to be long-term, at least 3 to 5 years. Project officials said they have been talking for nearly a decade about bringing more affordable housing projects to Midland and expect that will not change soon. Also, it was stated that when a taxing entity enters into a formal agreement for a certain number of units, if it falls short of filling those spaces, the taxing entity will pay the rents for spaces not used. A hospital official told the council that she expects there would be no problem filling its spaces. A school district official told the council that MISD will recruit 300 to 450 new teachers to come to Midland, and the local housing market is currently prohibitive to people looking to start their career. Council officials said the fact that a much denser housing project could have gone into that land was a reason for the passage. Hillcrest Village will have 10 units an acre, They also were complementary of the MCDC and previous projects, such as Pueblo del Arroyo, and stated this was a good longer-term solution to a piece of land that has been vacant since at least the 70s. Blong, whose district includes the land where Hillcrest Village will be built, said during the meeting that one reason for her vote was that property owners have rights in Midland. Tuesday's vote was the first of two votes that the city council will have on the ordinance. Texas Oil and Gas Royalty Collections Shatter Records by Mella McEwen. Though 2019 required Texas oil and gas producers to navigate a challenging global marketplace, it proved to be a banner year not just for the state but for the nation, according to the Texas Oil and Gas Association. In the association's annual report on the economic impact of the state's oil and gas industry, the Texas Oil and Gas Association president, Todd Staples, cited record domestic oil and gas production, the nation's new status as a net energy exporter, and growing momentum for U.S. liquefied natural gas. Focusing on the state, he told a media briefing, despite the challenges associated with the global marketplace, state and local taxes and state royalties shattered records last year and exceeded $16 billion, up 16% from fiscal year 2018. West Texas was the top beneficiary, according to the association's report, with the Pecos-Barstow-Toya Independent School District receiving $109.2 million from oil and gas property taxes, the most statewide, and 266% higher than the previous year. Reeves County also led the state in oil and gas property tax collections, receiving $41.6 million, quadruple collections in fiscal year 2018. Midland ISD ranked second, receiving $68.2 million, or 25.2% of its tax base from oil and gas property taxes. School districts across the Permian Basin received $653.7 million, and Permian Basin counties received $208.9 million, according to the report. On a daily basis, Staples said, the industry contributes $44 million to improving Texans' quality of life. Since 2007, the industry has paid more than $149 billion in state and local taxes and state royalties. Those revenues go into the State Highway Fund, Economic Stabilization Fund, also known as the Rainy Day Fund, the Permanent School Fund, and the Permanent University Fund. Staples said that 100% of the money in the Rainy Day Fund, aside from interest earned, comes from energy industry taxes. During last year's session, the Texas legislature appointed more than $6 billion from the Rainy Day Fund, some of which Staples said went into the following: more than $1.1 billion to the Texas Teacher Retirement System, with half invested in the pension fund and the other half financing a 13th check of up to $2,000 for retired teachers. $807 million to the Texas Education Agency to help school districts affected by Hurricane Harvey. $840 million to the Texas Water Development Board to develop and update flood risk maps and provide grant funding for flood-related projects. $445 million to the Health and Human Services Commission to improve state hospital facilities. $125 million for grants to counties to plan, maintain, and reconstruct roads affected by oil and gas development. Teachers, schools, health care, roads, all are impacted by oil and gas taxes and royalties, he said. Oil and natural gas does more than fuel our cars, power our homes and businesses, form the building blocks of our everyday goods, and secure our nation. Taxes paid by the oil and natural gas industry support teachers and schools, build roads, boost essential and emergency services, improve health care facilities, and bolster our state's infrastructure, he said. Staples cautioned that 2020 may not bring similar results. Growth is not guaranteed, he said. We're mindful of what the industry needs to continue to grow. 2020 may be more difficult. We may see bankruptcies. We may see merger and acquisitions. Job growth may lag. As the oil and gas industry weathers these challenges, we need to be there to help maintain and stabilize the industry, to continue its growth, and for the industry to continue investing in technology and innovation, He said science-based regulations and consistent policies are needed. The state's pipeline infrastructure needs to be expanded, and the state's ports and export capacity also need expansion. Man's explosive anger causes concern for easygoing fiancé. Dear Abby, I'm engaged to a wonderful guy. He is very sweet, and I'm beyond thankful for him. I wouldn't trade him for the world, but he has a character flaw that is hard to ignore. When he gets frustrated, he screams out loud and takes a while to get himself together. When he lost his phone on a plane, he was angry for hours. He pouted and scowled like the world had just ended. I have a very easygoing personality, and I don't understand this type of behavior. He contacted his phone provider, and a new phone was delivered to him within 24 hours. When I talked to him about his anger, he says sometimes people get frustrated and show emotions. He added that he has noticed this issue, and it's something he's been working on for years. What should I do or say the next time we encounter a mishap and he becomes angry? Wondering in Washington, D.C. Dear Wondering, your fiancé may be a perfectionist or even have a touch of OCD, which is why he is so hard on himself when he makes a mistake and becomes frustrated. For his own sake and yours, he needs to find a better way of venting his emotions. While anger is something everyone experiences at one time or another, most people start learning to control it during childhood. While pouting and scowling are acceptable, your fiancé screaming over losing his cell phone seems over the top. Not only that, it is intimidating. My booklet, The Anger in All of Us and How to Deal with It, contains suggestions for managing and constructively channeling anger in various situations. It can be ordered by sending your name, address, plus a check or money order for $8 U.S. funds to Dear Abby Anger Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Your fiancé needs to learn to channel his emotions more constructively, because if he doesn't, it may eventually drive others away. We live in increasingly stressful times. It takes self-control as well as maturity to react calmly instead of exploding. Being in touch with his emotions will not only help your fiancé calm himself without losing it, it will also help him maintain the respect of others. Dear Abby, I have a friend and co-worker who likes to play with my hair, rub my back, and put her hands on me in general. I'm not a touchy-feely kind of person with anyone, and it makes me very uncomfortable when she does this. Is there a polite way of telling her to stop without making her feel uncomfortable or hurting her feelings? I'm not a beat-around-the-bush kind of person, and I sometimes lack tact of putting things nicely. No touchy-feely. Dear No Touchy-Feely, to express your feelings would not be lacking in tact. I would be setting a boundary. Try this. I like you very much, and I know the feelings are mutual, but I do not like to be touched, and I want you to stop doing it.
Man's low ambition casts shadow on couple's future. Dear Abby for Wednesday. Dear Abby, I've been dating a great guy for a year and a half. He's funny, smart, and when he comes to my house, he washes my dishes and plays with my son. He is attentive and he cooks for me. He is always buying me little things like a desk coffee heater because he knows I love hot coffee, or smart bulbs that create cool colors in the living room. He's a super fun guy and he often leaves sweet little notes around the house for me. The downside is he has zero ambition, zero motivation, and no life goals. We are in our early 30s, and I'm a professional with my own home. He lives in a small room in a house with two housemates. His job pays very little, but although he has few responsibilities, he has been very slow to look for other jobs. Abby, I have talked to him about our future. We both want to be together, but I told him I am not going to support him. We want to move in together, but he needs to be more financially stable. He needs to be my equal. When we spoke, he agreed with me and the fact that he can do better. He promised he would be looking. But I have been waiting months to see a change in him. Nothing. Should I wait for him? Should I talk to him again? I want so much more, and I am not sure he can deliver. I don't want to stay just because my son loves him so much. What should I do? Hopelessly vexed. Dear Hopelessly, I understand your position. You seem to want the whole package, and from what you have written, this person is not it. You should not have to support him, and he shouldn't expect it. It appears that while the two of you care for each other, he simply cannot summon up the motivation to make the effort to better himself financially. Could you accept this in the long run? Is the status quo what you want forever? Bear in mind, if this man moves in, it will prevent you from finding a partner who is your equal in all ways. Dear Abby, my son got married 8 months ago. I recently found out he and his wife haven't sent thank you notes to anyone. Some of our friends and family took time off work, traveled across the country, spent a lot of money on airfare, hotels, meals, as well as wedding gifts. I am mortified. Abby, there were only 60 guests, so there were fewer than 30 thank you notes to send. When I asked my son about it last week, he said they hadn't sent them because so much time had passed and it was too late. I told him it was inexcusable and they need to get those notes written now because this is definitely a case of better late than never. If they do it within the next week, I intend to contact my friends and family and thank them myself and apologize for their rudeness. My son was not raised to be ungrateful and rude. What do you think? Furious in Arizona. Dear Furious, what you have in mind may be well-intentioned, but it won't make up for your son and daughter-in-law's lack of courtesy. If they fail to contact the guests who made such an effort to attend their wedding, do not speak up on their behalf because it will only make them look worse.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.